Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's topic should have you smiling, but we also hope it has you thinking. We'll be talking about improv, the theatrical art in which whatever is performed is created at the very moment it's performed. The potential for contemporary humor is enormous. Think Saturday Night Live and some of your favorite funny people like Tina Fey, John Belushi, Stephen Colbert, many others. But more and more, there's a practical side to this art form and the skill set it develops. Business writers and thinkers say improv helps people to listen and communicate better, skills that easily leave the stage and come into our personal life and into the workplace. They say that instead of shutting down an idea, improv lets a team build on it, take that idea to a new place. As one writer and thinker on this topic put it, a bunch of really smart people can kill any idea. You can always find out what's wrong with an idea, but you can't necessarily find out what's good with that idea. So hopefully today we'll learn how improv helps. We're very lucky to have members of Anchorage's two local improv troupes, Urban Yeti and Scared Scriptless. All three happen to be people with day jobs, and some of what we'll talk about here today is how they take the principles of improv into the workplace. So let's welcome to Hometown Alaska, John Hannes.
Yes, Hannes, that's right.
Hannes, okay, I should have asked you before.
No worries.
So here's the lowdown on John. He started improv in 2003 at Washington State University, and it became a passion that he carried with him to Anchorage. Well, he's actually from Anchorage, but he brought it back to Anchorage, and has worked as a performer and director with Scared Scriptless before creating Urban Yeti Improv with his wife, Mallory. He's also a father and an engineering team lead with BP Alaska. And with Urban Yeti, John's been able to perform in Washington, New York, Austin, and all over Alaska. And he also helps out in the community. He works with some UAA students that have an improv troupe. So, John, welcome so much.
No, thanks. I appreciate the introduction. I've never felt so fancy in my entire life.
Well, you're
life,
very important. So very nice. Okay, now we're going to introduce John Parsi. He's a lawyer at K&L Gates, so we have a lawyer in the room. He started improvising in 2010 after he came up to Alaska to clerk for a judge, Morgan Christen, of the Alaska Supreme Court. Very serious.
Yeah,
very
I know.
Very serious. And he performs with Scared Scriptless and Urban Yeti, and he also directs Urban Yeti After Dark. John has done scripted work in Anchorage with Perseverance Theater, the One Minute Play Festival, Tosspot Productions, and Cyrano's, and he's a member of the Board of Directors for Alaska Common Ground and an artist member of the Anchorage Concert Association Innovation Team.
Yeah.
Welcome, John.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we have John 1 and John 2.
Yeah, you can just refer to us for the rest of the interview like that.
That's what we all do.
Yeah. Oh, man. I got to be 2.
Sorry. Yeah, John 2. Okay, right. Halfway through the show, we'll switch, and you can... Okay.
Thank you. Fair.
And then we also have Annalise Palmer, who began improvising in high school at Chugiak High School with Scared Scriptless, and... was happy to have found a way to do theater without memorizing lines. Annalise has taught and performed improv with Scared Scriptless, Harvard's Immediate Gratification Players, Urban Yeti Improv, and the Bartlett Theater Group. She's committed to developing robust opportunities for youth comedy in Anchorage. Annalise works as the programs manager at the Anchorage Museum. So different walks of life, but all improv players. Okay. And I invite our listeners to give us a call if you... You know, we're going to play some games, but I think we're going to play the games in the studio. So we're not exactly saying call up and play games with us. But but if you have questions about improv or you've seen these folks perform or you just kind of you have an idea about how improv actually works off the stage in life and in work, we'd love to hear from you. And in Anchorage, you can give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or we can take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so, you know, my dream is that we spend the first half hour talking about what improv actually is and where it comes from and maybe a little bit of its evolution from all of you, you know, just talking about it. And then maybe in the second half, tackle some of that, how does it go off the stage and into life, whether that's at work or with your two-year-old or whatever. So let's start with a little bit, just a tiny bit of history, because when I did my, you know, Wikipedia research, it goes back to 391 in the Romans or something like that, where there were really, really bad jokes. That's they were.
I wasn't going to take that history back that far.
Yeah,
but,
so nice. This is a burden you have to carry. But then the next thing I saw was it's like Commedia dell'arte in Italy, when players would be out in the street and they'd have kind of a bare outline of a script that they were doing. But then the more I read, it seems like it really picked up speed in Chicago in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Correct, yep.
And places like, I heard the Compass Players, I'd never heard of them, but then Second City. Mm-hmm. And then come the names that, you know, Tina Fey, people like that came out of there. But it was begun not as humor, but as exercises, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can really trace it back here in the United States till the 1950s, 1960s timeframe. A lot of the names that are thrown around are like Del Close and company. He was with the Committee Players in San Francisco and then brought a lot of that work over to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. It was used more as exercises to create sketches for Second City and both their shows in Chicago and their traveling tours. And then folks like Del Close and Sharna Halpern and McNapier kind of took it into different theater houses and said that this product can stand on its own. There's no reason it just needs to be a feeder to sketch. And then you had the advent of companies like the Annoyance Theater, IO, and then some common ones today you see are like Upright Citizens Brigade Comedy and the Groundlings in the California area. So there are people that are making this a viable, profitable product, and it's entertaining audiences across the country, whereas before it was just that exercise to help Second City do sketches.
Yeah. And before the show we were chatting, and one of the things you said is the most frustrating is that people just think it's stand-up comedy. And let's talk a little bit about that, why that's not a good assumption about improv. And anybody can jump in here, so...
Well, for one thing, we don't write jokes ahead of time. So everything is made up on the spot. So, uh-huh. You know, in stand-up, oftentimes you'll have jokes. You'll have a story that
yes,
you want to tell.
Yes, you have a monologue, right? And a whole thing you're doing.
There's none of that in improv. We come in with blank brains, which is hard to do sometimes, and then just make stuff up. As it is derisively called by some, it's the make-em-ups. and so we don't do that. And oftentimes we're asked that by the general public, hey, funny person, make me laugh with your
Be
jokes.
Funny.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just not necessarily something we do.
Yeah.
And so
first of all, it's not a solo event, right?
No,
it's a team event. So
I would say that for me is the biggest difference between stand-up and improv is I used to do a stand-up bit, I'll call it. It wasn't really a set in college where it was improvised, but it was myself on stage. And I had a character that I knew she was going to say certain things, certain suggestions, but it was still stand-up because it was completely about the focus and the spotlight being on you. Uh-huh. And I could control the performance and I could control what I was saying. I only had to listen to myself, which is really easy to do.
Yes.
So it was very different than when you're on stage. John Parsi said earlier something that was really true is that you can only control one thing, that's yourself, but you have to listen and really, really pay attention to what's going on around you because
right.
It's a team sport.
Right. And I want to talk about some of those fundamentals of improv. But first, I'd like to learn a little bit about Scared Scriptless and a little bit about Urban Yeti Improv, because they're two local groups here. I think Scared Scriptless is the oldest.
Yes, absolutely. Right. He's got about a decade on us, I think.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And who were the founders? Are they still part of it right now?
There are none of the founders are still in Scared Scriptless. Jason Martin was kind of the biggest vehicle in creating Scared Scriptless. He's the grandfather.
Yeah, shout out to Jason Martin for keeping this product alive so long within Alaska,
a
right?
Decade.
And so it's led to us today. So.
You'll recognize him. He's the tall, bald man with the fire shoes.
This one's for you, Jason.
Hope you're listening today.
Yeah.
Catch it on the podcast.
So, right. And actually, it was pretty funny because Warren Weinstein, one of the members of Scared Scriptless, we were at the Valdez Theater Conference, and we were talking about how Scared Scriptless started. And it was, Jason and Warren were in a show, and someone didn't show up for a cue. So the scene was just cut from the show. And the two of them said, hey, I never want that to happen again. I want to be able to adapt on my feet if something goes wrong. And so in part, that was an inspiration for starting Scared Scriptless was, well, we want to learn all about improv. Like, how do people do this? How do they create a show without any lines, without any scripts,
mm-hmm.
and Scared Scriptless was born from there.
Yeah, I remember when they were first beginning, I think in Cyrano's they would meet,
yep.
But now I'm not sure where they are now. I know there's a website, we've got it on our...
Yeah, we're all at 49 State Brewing Company and doing shows there, so...
The Improv HQ.
Yeah, Improv
the House
Headquarters.
Improv.
So we just joined together in a contract for this year for 49 State opening so that we could get improv all under one roof, say a consistent message of improv is second, third, fourth Saturdays, and get us all involved, so it's been really great so far.
Oh, okay, so yeah. Lots of collaboration.
Yeah. Right.
Lots of collaboration.
And I think the Scared Script was just as a shout-out to Side Street Espresso. That was the first venue, so
okay.
It started there and then moved to Cyrano's with Sandy Harper.
Okay.
Yeah, And I will say one more shout out, since we're shout outing. I mean, the current owners are Kristen Dugan and Sean Dugan, right? And they've been doing really amazing things with Scared Scriptless, and they're directing the performers and keeping the shows running and putting up a really great product. So I want to make sure we don't talk about Scared Scriptless too much without talking about kind of the backbone of them right now.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
It's a big
sure.
operation to
yeah.
run.
Yeah.
Lots of respect.
And of course, they're probably all people with day jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a passion that they're doing on the side. How about Urban Yeti Improv? Now, I'm looking right at John Hannes because he's a founder with his wife, Mallory.
Yeah, Mallory and I got out of the game. So we did some work with Scriptless, and then we got out when we had our son, James, and we took a little bit of a break. And we wanted to get back in the game, but we didn't necessarily want to go back to complete short form, which, and we'll probably talk about that a little
sure.
bit later, what that means. And so we created Urban Yeti Improv about 3 years ago to try something a little bit different and to bring longer form improv stylings here to Anchorage. And we're working with a little bit of a smaller team because it's easy to manage the time commitments and the activity level with that. And it matches our lifestyle, our day jobs, and our family life mm-hmm, a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So Urban Yeti has been a heck of a ride for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And the rehearsal, the product we put up, the traveling that we've done, and the family environment that we've created, we couldn't be more proud.
Right. And Annalise, I want to bring you in here because I know that I went to an improv show at UAA in the Black Box Theater, and it was kind of a high school, but I think there were some college kids there. I'm not sure you were there.
Was it this last spring?
Spring, and I think Warren was the MC.
Yeah.
And maybe you were there?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, that's when I saw how excited high school kids were. They
that's
were,
great.
I mean, they all came in with bow ties and t-shirts and bow ties. And
improvising bow ties.
Yeah.
Correlation.
It just made me laugh.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
It was a collaboration between the UAA Alchemists and the Bartlett and Chugiak Improv Troupe. So
right.
we did a big joint show by
Big.
It was a fundraiser. Yeah.
Community fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. We've done a lot of joint shows between the schools this past year.
Uh-huh.
It's been sort of a priority of ours. I think East High School, Bartlett, Chugiak, South have all been really involved in doing shows at previously known as the Snow Goose down in the basement.
49th
State Brewing.
State Brewing Company,
where we donate the money to a charity of the Students' Choice.
I remember that day they were donating it to like a program that helps kids with lunch quietly, puts money on their lunch
mm-hmm,
cards
mm-hmm.
if they're out. And they talked about the need for that in local high schools. There was a big need for kids who just didn't have enough food, which is interesting.
Yeah, Children's Lunchbox. It was really, really powerful, I think, for the students, too, because you all know someone that might struggle with getting money or getting food for lunch, and it was it's a very subtle program, which was
I liked that about
a nice
it.
Approach. Yeah,
you didn't sort of have to raise your hand and say, yes, I am hungry.
Mm-hmm.
No, you just kind of
mm-hmm.
sign up, and then you've got the money on
mm-hmm.
your lunch card. But what I do want to ask you about is, why do you think those kids are so excited about it? Is it because they've been groomed by, you know, Saturday Night Live, and that's what they think they're doing, or they're just manic, you know, performers anyway, and you're trying to channel it?
I think it's the same reason that we're all excited about improv.
So no difference in the age
group. No, you get to play make-believe as an adult and mm-hmm. make other people laugh. So you're validated in playing make-believe, which usually is like, you know, sort of frowned upon after you become 7 or 8 years old.
I believe it is stamped out of you
early
on.
So this is a societally approved way of playing make-believe on stage with your friends.
Okay.
And then you get this awesome constant feedback from the audience, which is, you know, reinvigorates whatever you're
right.
saying.
And so it's very important that the audience be with you. You feel
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's I think, a sign of a good improv show is that the audience is with you, but that you also could do this on your own without an audience, and it would be equally fun and equally rewarding, and which is like our practices.
Yeah, I also think, you know, we name drop quite a bit in terms to better explain improv and how that industry has grown in the United States, and you name drop things like names like Tina Fey and John Belushi and organizations Saturday Night Live
right.
and IO and Second City, but the reality is the Anchorage market is amazing to do art in, and that has been confirmed several times by us traveling and performing in other cities, and the crowds and the community here that are hungry to do these creative things it just makes for an amazing place to perform improv and perform with different people and do things like open rehearsals and classes and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. And there really is, in Anchorage, there really is no need to name drop because they're just hungry for that creativity,
right.
not necessarily for that namesake, which is amazing.
Right. I think there's something about you're far away from every place, so if you're going to have it, you're going to have it in your own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to make a show.
So you've got symphony, you've got opera, you know, you've got all these theater companies in town and two improv troupes. I know we're not a little city, you know, we're really not a little city, 325,000 or something like that. But I still think some of that energy comes from, I want to live here, but I also want these things in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I do find that very interesting and signature of Alaska and of Anchorage. Yeah. So
if we're still doing shout outs, are we still doing shout outs?
Yes, it's okay. This is shout out portion of the show.
Shout out to the Anchorage audiences. I think they're the amazing audiences to perform with. Uh-huh. You can just, everyone's so hungry and eager to watch and to participate too. A lot of times it's, you know, pulling teeth to get someone to give a suggestion or come on stage. But Anchorage audiences, they're too shy
to raise their hand. And say, right.
They're amazing. Yeah, not that I haven't performed for a wide range, that many audiences, but Anchorage is definitely my favorite place to perform.
And it's funny you talk about the size of the city because we've spoken with improvisers. We've performed at the Del Close Marathon in New York and Out of Bounds in Austin. So we've met improvisers from all over the world. And I do think we have something special. And I think our Anchorage audiences are part of that. Mm-hmm. They really do embrace it. And a lot of communities, people have become cynical about improv. So a lot of improv audiences are other improvisers. And that is not true here. Mm-hmm. We are still an audience-driven art form. We do it for our audience. Mm-hmm. That's what our shows and product is for. And so it's really wonderful to have an audience that embraces that.
Yeah. You know, I want to throw this date out because I saw it on your various websites that you are going to have an open rehearsal, I think you call it, mm-hmm. On July 6th down at 49th State Brewing Company. And are you trying to grow your troops or are you just trying to introduce people to the notion and the fun of it? What is the purpose of those open rehearsals?
Yeah, we actually get that question quite a bit in terms of auditions and are you trying to grow through open rehearsal? And mm-hmm. I would just say that the fact is we like to have fun and we like to meet new people and we like to perform with a different range of people regardless of what skill level that is. And so we've started doing open rehearsals again. Urban Yeti did them back at Alaska Experience Theater and mm-hmm. they were a huge success. And we combined with Scriptless to do them every first Wednesday. Annalise taught the first one. It went fantastic. I'll be teaching the one next week. And it's just a chance to get the community more involved, because if the community is engaged to the level of wanting to come out and to participate, they're going to be really engaged for the shows. They're going to be really engaged to look at your promotion and to talk about it and to kind of freely speak about improv. And it helps just mm-hmm. build that community of art.
Mm-hmm. Really quickly, just in case anyone is thinking, what is an open rehearsal? Do I want to come? The answer is yes, you want to come. Yeah. You definitely want to come.
What would be expected of me?
It's such a safe and fun environment, or at least we try to make it a safe and fun environment.
But people will be getting up on the stage with you.
You get up on stage, but if you don't want to and you want to watch, that's totally fine. I mean, we'll pressure you, and I'll use all my high school peer pressure that I can muster to try to get you on stage. But it's real safe space. You just can become a playground of improv, John Hannes calls it, where uh-huh. you can sort of try exercises, try it for the first time without having to have that be at an audition. Mm-hmm. It's really, really fun. So if you've never seen improv or if you have and you want to try it, it's a great place to come out and sort of just see what it's about.
Play.
It's all about playing.
So just in case people join us and don't know who these wonderful voices are on the radio, we're talking about improv, and I have John Hannes of Urban Yeti Improv and Annalise Palmer, probably going back and forth between Scared Scriptless and Urban Yeti, and John Parsi, I think, has gone back and forth too.
Yep.
So everybody plays in everybody else's backyard here, apparently. So,
right.
And we're talking about improv, both, you know, the art form and we're going to get into some of the kind of principles or the truths about improv, what makes improv work. And then in the second half hour, we want to talk a little bit about how that translates off the stage into normal life or even to business life or work life. And I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time. If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. And statewide, 1-888-353-5752. And we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's talk about some of the principles, because that was kind of fun for me to learn. That's where I kind of thought, oh, this is much more than entertaining an audience. This is about making your life move forward, you know, or making ideas move forward, or getting along with your kids, or just all different kinds of things. So let's talk about some of them. Do you want to throw one out?
I like the idea of like starting with yes and how that ties into short form game work. So I don't know if Annalise or John want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, what is yes and?
Yes and is just accepting whatever your partner gives and then adding to it. So instead of denying someone or saying no or saying, oh, wow, that's a crazy idea. Why are you holding a ladle? doesn't make sense for you to be holding a ladle. Right. I would say, oh, wow, Annalise, you've got a ladle. That's great. And now we're going to make soup together. And so it is a way of developing scenes by working together.
So pushing the action forward somehow.
Correct.
And it's the cornerstone to improv. You'll see improvisers with Yes And tattooed on their wrists. And, yeah, I have a nice forehead
tattoo in the works.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it works really well for like short, and it works well, of course, for every scene you do improvised. But short form game work is more, you have rules. You have rules that are kind of are boundary conditions for your games, and you're usually doing 3 to 5 minute scenes. Scriptless specializes in short form improv. We do it for the second half of our shows over at Yeti. And it's more of like, it's really important to get those concepts of crow, character relationship, object work and where, and kind of that yes and mentality, because you have 3 to 5 minutes and you need to get through that content.
Something
to make sure the audience
yeah.
connects, right? Uh-huh. So those are essential concepts. And then it gets a little bit more in depth when you hit long form. But
right.
Well, before we go there, I'm going to go ahead and go to the phones here. We have a question from Rebecca. And something about explaining the format. What's your question, Rebecca?
Yes, hi. About 25 years ago, I was working at a homeless shelter in Washington, D.C., and I was invited to go to the living stage, to all of us, all the providers from homeless shelters, senior centers, after-school programs, went to this program, and we got to see what this improv company did. And I will never forget the director, and this is 25 years ago, said, "We believe and we operate on the premise that all human beings are magnificent, and we want to help them find their magnificence." And so they would work with all these different groups of people throughout the city. And I should say these were equity actors, and they got a lot of foundation funding. But they would go into these different groups. They would go into these different groups, and they would do this improv show. And for us, they started off by asking us to start talking about words that were important to us. And people threw out words or the important things that we did, during the day with the people that we served. And our issues, and they made that into this rhythm of words, and they just broke into this play, because there was a lot of homeless people, a lot of providers worked with homeless people, and then they took these words, like the drug addiction, teen pregnancy, violence, and they took the rhythm of this word and turned it into this great play.
Hmm.
We were just totally mesmerized. And,
I want to hear from the guys here.
I think that's the perfect segue into another key principle of improv, is that truth in comedy aspect. That was a beautiful story. So thank you very much.
Thanks for relating really that experience. Was. Yeah,
awesome.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's that aspect of, you don't just go for the joke when you do improvisation comedy. You just show truth on stage, and by the audience connecting to that truth, that's where the entertainment value comes in. And so that aspect of them taking words and taking really serious concepts and making a rhythm out of it, and then taking that into play and scene work and building themes and coming back to those themes and showing the audience those impressive connections that they're making as a team and within their own heads. That's really the beauty of the art form, and it's just amazing to hear about your experiences and compare it to art too.
Right,
yeah.
Very much a real world situation, was it designed to elevate the providers or make the providers see the importance of their work or just give them a day off?
Right, that was just one little program that they did for providers. Providers. It was really for the clients and the people that like the children in after school care or the unwed moms and pregnancy centers or senior centers or a lot of homeless shelters, but they did not let providers come, and that was why we had this special little piece just for us to let us see what they did.
Nice.
But I worked at this shelter, and the women one morning got to go to the show, and they came back, and it was transformative. It was totally transformative. And I'll never forget this very old woman who had been homeless for many, many years and had lived in our shelter for a good year. Whatever they came up with, she was an opera singer on the moon.
Yeah.
I know. So it was quite a story.
That's nice. Great.
Very
That's
nice.
Great.
So I look forward to coming to your show. Thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca. Appreciate it. We're going to go to another caller. Hi, Richard. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Okay. Is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Okay, sorry about the voice.
Okay.
I just, you know, they were talking about the historical aspects of improv in Anchorage. And I want to talk about, I was with an improv troupe back in the 1980s called the Synergy Scene Machine that was run out of the Synergy Dinner Theater downtown.
Okay.
And we did shows once a week for 3 straight years on nothing but, well, we started off doing a combination of suggestions and skits, but one day, you know how it works, you get kind of angry at each other. We decided that we wouldn't do any more skits. So we did nothing
but get angry at each other.
Do you get angry at each other?
We did nothing but, you know, audience suegestions for the next 2.5 years. But through that, I mean, we would bring in kids from the high schools to do stuff with us. Actually, Jason, good old Jason, at the time he had hair.
No, you remember
don't
that?
Say that's not true. No,
that hurt. Yeah.
Yeah, we brought him in years ago. You know, his high school teacher, I believe, was Vicki Russell.
Oh, I know Vicki Russell, yeah.
Right, instrumental in a lot of this stuff. Sharon Harrison, who was in charge of Synergy, they decided it was something good. It was a kind of a who's who of a lot of theater people that were within this thing. We had people like David Hayne.
Yeah, David.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Forget, who does, you know, Weather. He's great improver.
Huh.
You know, Frank the Clown, who's kind of was an interesting person in those days.
I remember Frank
the Clown.
I wish
one of our troop members had a clown after their name.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
All right. Well, Richard, thanks a lot.
We were like, in a lot of ways, you know, we felt that we were kind of like the old people of improv. And so, you know, we still sneak into these improv shows and don't tell anybody who we are, just to watch what everybody does.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. You know, they'll be there.
Yeah, we used to have certain rules. For instance, we would never curse. We thought that would just lower what we were doing. We wouldn't go for the joke. You know, we'd always make sure whatever we did played it out. Our biggest rule was never go for the cheap laugh.
Right.
Perfect. Well, Richard, I'm sorry to say we don't carry the no cursing rule in our shows anymore. We might get a little rowdy sometimes.
Standards have dropped.
Right. Yeah. No.
It depends on your audience, probably.
Yeah. Right.
If,
definitely.
If they enjoy it or if they're there, you know. So, well, Richard, I really appreciate that little bit of Anchorage history. I remember Synergy. I remember the gray building near the museum. And that was great little reminiscence. Thank you.
Certainly.
All right. Take care. All right. So I want to talk maybe about one more principle. And of course, I did my homework and I found things like agreement we talked about. Listening is really important. And we haven't actually talked about that a lot. But it's like we don't listen. So what can we say about how improv tunes your ears to become a listener?
To me, improv really hits hard the difference between hearing and listening. And I think that, to me, is the concept that probably has bled most into my professional and personal life, where you're on stage and you're creating up everything as you go. And you have to listen to not only what offers are being put on the table. So we'll go to the ladle example earlier that John Farsi said. If I am miming a ladle, you can hear me. I mean, I'm mixing my senses now. But if you see me just holding an object, and I'm really poorly miming a huge ladle right now.
I see the ladle.
Master
I see the
ladle. Improv work. Yes. Going on in the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
Master mime. I can be called Annalise the Mime after this. You can be John the Clown. You can see me holding something, but if you're really listening to me, listening to my body language, listening to maybe if I mention something about a kitchen or something like that, then you know that I have a ladle and that we can build off that way. Or if I'm listening to you. I'm really looking at your body language. I'm looking at what character, if your character's high status or low status by the way that they're holding their body. And so through listening, you can build a scene with a lot more nuance and a lot more interesting little like tidbits in that little interesting conflict.
But you can misread, right?
It happens all the time.
You can listen badly.
Or
you can project in a way that your poor partner can't get what you're...
I don't love it when like a scene goes haywire, but it really keeps you on your toes every once in a while.
Yeah.
Where you might be doing something. I think I was trying to play marbles. I was like miming playing marbles, and someone came in and thought I was like, you know, doing something completely different than I was, you know, an older character when I was trying to be a younger character. And then there's a moment, probably at like 2 seconds maybe, where you kind of look each other in the eye and you go, okay, this is happening. Let's get back on the same page. And either you build something out of that misunderstanding, which I think is the third rule, no mistakes in improv. You build something out of it and say like, yeah, I'm an old man that plays marbles, and keep going, or you quickly get back on one person's page and go through that storyline, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. If there's a blip of misunderstanding, that's that's A-okay.
The number one thing we have to tell people when we're doing classes or when even we're in rehearsal on ourselves is that slow it down aspect of good improv comedy. And I think that's something to recognize. If you want to immerse yourself in this art form, you have to realize you have to take time, take a breath. When you're in a scene, don't freak out. You have those 2 seconds. Just take a deep breath, try to figure out where both of you are at, what characters you are, and then move on in that manner. And it's so refreshing when you do it that way.
And then slowing down, I think also you are forced to get rid of your ideas, which is helpful. We call it a preloading, when you're like, I'm gonna go into this scene and I'm gonna be a hilarious horse that is also can talk, and then I'm gonna meet 5 different characters along my way. It's gonna be the best scene ever. And you go in and you are like about to say, "Nay, I'm a talking horse," and someone's like, "Billy, bring me the screwdriver," and you're like, I had this great horse idea.
Yeah, no preloading.
And so really slowing it down and listening forces you to just like get rid of whatever you had planned. It's probably not as funny as what's actually going to happen on stage.
Yeah. That's great. That's so great. We have to take a tiny little break here. If you're listening and wondering, what are they talking about? It's improv. We have John Hannes of Urban Yeti Improv, Annalise Palmer, working at the Anchorage Museum, but with a long history of improv in Anchorage, and John Parsi, a lawyer who does improv. And we'll be right back. We have callers hanging on, so we'll get to you in the second half hour. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I'm having so much fun today because we have improv as a topic on the show. And we've had a couple of great callers with good questions. We were just talking about kind of the principles of improv. And once again, my guests are John Hannes of Urban Yeti, Annalise Palmer, and John Parsi. And I'm just going to go, we have one more caller that I didn't get in our first half hour, and I just want to bring him in and give him a chance to ask his question or tell us an improv story. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for having this great show.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I just wanted to make a comment. One of your other great shows on the station is This American Life, and I just wanted to bring up a segment they had on one time about dealing with folks who have friends or relatives with Alzheimer's or dementia, and the frustration and sadness of trying to communicate with them when folks don't always remember family and, you know, what their life is all about. And the story revolved around a son-in-law who was an improv guy, and he was the favorite of this woman because when he came to visit her, if she would say something like, "Oh, there's monkeys out in the garden," instead of folks getting upset or trying to correct the woman, he would just say, as you're saying, "Yes, and," he would just say, "You know, they're usually not here this early in the spring, are they?" And he would just go with it. And
that's good.
He had a wonderful relationship with her because he went into her world and enjoyed it with her. And I thought it was just a great story, and it relates to improv.
Yeah.
That is really good.
That was a great episode, too.
Yeah.
I remember that episode. It was awesome.
Yeah. It's very touching, actually, because here's somebody that's society's kind of throwing away, denying, saying no, you know, and here's a way of saying yes to them. And that's kind of poignant, too, I think. So that's a great story, John. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
All right. Okay. So we were talking about listening, and I had worn these folks here that we were going to try to demonstrate a game. So what would you like? Drum roll. Because this is how you play, right?
Right.
We were thinking about I was kind of thinking about that challenge, which is a beautiful challenge. Thank you for the challenge.
They leap to the opportunity.
About, you know, showcasing a little bit of the improv principles and that idea. We talked a little bit about yes and. And I think we'll just start. Can you just give me something that we can sell? Maybe a product that we can sell or something like that?
A product we can sell. Yeah. Pet monkeys? No?
Pet monkeys. Beautiful. Okay. Beautiful. Hey, Annalise and John, can you just step into my office real quick here?
Yeah.
All right, that's great. We have a customer. All right, we got business. We got business.
We got business, guys. It's the first business of the year.
But it's a bit of a curveball. We gotta sell a bunch of monkeys.
We can do that.
Yeah.
We can do that, boss. Right. We can do that.
All right, I need your ideas right now. Spit them out.
What if we say it's a human and you got a new best friend, but it's a human friend?
Oh, that relationship connection. Beautiful.
Yeah. Maybe you could send monkeys to other people.
Oh,
monkey in a box.
Oh man! And when it comes to that's perfect. And
then
when it comes to the door, there's just beautiful heartfelt note that this is now your new best friend, and it's kind of rattling around a little bit, and then you open it up,
and
bam,
there's a monkey.
Yeah,
boom.
Your imagination is in front of you.
I saw a monkey walking a dog once. It was pretty cute. That was all. That wasn't an idea. It was just a comment on the topic.
Yeah. Beautiful. So let's keep them going.
I mean, like, I was seeing the other day, a lot of people move up to Anchorage. They got a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with the boxes?
I don't know. What are they going to do with the boxes?
What are they going to do?
Fill them with monkeys.
Brilliant.
Boxes. That's awesome. It's depressing to see monkey in boxes. It's depressing to see just empty boxes around the city. Yeah. Let's fill them with monkeys.
Yeah. Why not?
Let's fill them with monkeys. Hey, and then, I have the perfect idea here.
What is it?
Then we create an advertising campaign, all right? We get 15 seconds on the TV, all right? And all we do, we don't even use words. We just put 15 monkeys on the screen. We just film it for 15 seconds, and then we put monkeys in boxes, and bam, it's sold.
You know what they said? If you keep a monkey in a room, eventually it'll say Shakespeare. Right?
Right. Yeah, I heard that. I heard that too.
I read it on the internet on a tweet.
All right, I can't keep it together. Same. That was absolutely ridiculous, but it was trying to demonstrate, and I think successfully in some places.
Yes, I heard yes and.
Yeah, that idea of taking an idea and expanding on it, and that idea of just, you know, inserting your creativity and how you can expand it. And so that's what that exercise tries to get at.
Right. No, I think that worked well.
Lots of raised eyebrows.
Yeah, that was improv for us because we had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, there were lots of eyes going back and forth and signals, but then they just jumped in and started. So
yeah, maybe let's try one more. We're still on this roller coaster.
Right. Oh yeah.
Why don't you just give us your next question and to demonstrate kind of that, hopefully demonstrate some of that listening aspect. We're just going to answer it one word at a time.
Okay. Mm. So I'm asking any question I want.
Anything you want.
This is a question I think people always want to know. What was your biggest mistake?
Too
much
talking.
Oh,
man.
I
went
off
the
deep
end
one
morning
and
didn't
listen
to
my
scene
partners
until
Jim
told
me,
hey,
buddy,
you
need
to
keep
your
mouth
shut.
Look
into
my
eyes
and
tell
a
story
gently.
The
end.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
There are no rules.
Just a little short vignette, if you will.
And so you were all like really focused and listening very carefully. And, you know, I was thinking you could be anticipating what you're going to say, but you don't, you have to have something, you have to have a word, but you can't drive the story.
I was anticipating. I thought you were going to bring it back to the monkeys in the box. So everywhere I was like, monkey, no.
Master improv right there. There's
Annalise, I hate to tell you this, but when you come home, there's going to be a monkey in a box.
That sounds great. I need a friend.
It only costs $8,000 on a black market internet website. Just don't worry about it.
Do you guys remember the Monkey Wharf here in Anchorage?
No, it was
a bar that had monkeys behind the bar in a big glass. This is going way back. It was only open maybe, I got here in 81, it was maybe open 6 months while I was here and gone. But a lot of people remember it.
But wow. See, that's perfect.
There were monkeys in.
Then you would tag in, all right, mm-hmm. and you mm-hmm. would take the stage, and then all of a sudden we're doing a scene about the
monkey wharf.
The monkey wharf here in Anchorage, and then all the Anchorage population is like, oh, I remember that. They're connecting, and it's a beautiful
right,
moment.
Right. Okay, that's great. Well, that's good. So it got hotter in here, didn't it? Oh. When you were working so hard, I now I'm hot. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know we want to spend some time talking about how this works in real life. I mean, how you carry it off the stage. But I don't know if we're done yet about talking about the connection with the audience, because to me that's pretty, really powerful. Mm-hmm. Are there other things we should say about this? Like when the audience isn't going there, I mean, you could blame the audience.
No.
You never blame the audience.
Never.
Okay, it's never their fault.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah, you have to be responsive. I mean, after all, it's an art form that is based on the audience. We talk about listening and we listen to each other, but we also have to listen to our audience and adapt to them because that's who it's for, after all. That's what art is not. For us, it's not ego-driven, it's empathy-driven. We want to have people relate to us and for us to relate to them.
Mm.
So we're a reflection.
It's really therapy on stage,
right? It is. Yeah. Oh, it's so therapeutic. It's. I think it's, and I'm glad Rebecca called in with the tale about the service providers,
yes.
is improv, and theater, art in general, is very therapeutic. I think improv specifically and comedy right. as a general area is extraordinarily therapeutic because it dives so deeply into the truths about the world and your own personal experience mm-hmm. that you get to like work a lot of stuff out on stage mm-hmm. while you perform. Mm-hmm. So for the performers, it's extraordinarily therapeutic. It's almost like meditating.
You should be paying the audience, right?
Yeah. Well, I feel like that. And then for the audience, you get to connect and relate to what's going on, and sort of you're working it through in your brain in your own way.
Yeah.
And you're laughing, you know, releases a lot of great chemicals in your brain.
Yeah. And I'll use it to bridge a little bit into that idea of longer form improvisation
mm-hmm.
and the creativity and connection that you were forced to inspire there. I mean, we talked a little bit about short form being 3 to 5 minutes and rules-based sort of game. Long form, a lot of the times it's described as you take one word suggestion and then you have to build a 30 to 45 minute grouping of scenes or a one act or a story, and you don't necessarily have that fuel to go back to every 3 to 5 minutes in the audience. And man, that forces you to connect with people, with both your fellow performers and an audience in a way that it's very challenging but very rewarding in the end. So I don't know if you guys want to make any comments about that. But
yeah, and so this is an interesting anecdote. We were at the Alaska State Improv Festival, which is in Juneau. And I was going to the airport to fly down to Arizona, where my family is from, after being at the festival, and to go to a work conference. And there was a gentleman who just kind of walked by, and he was giving me a funny look, and I was like, okay. And then he kept on walking. Then he sat right next to me, and he said, my wife and I have been talking about this long-form scene we had done the night before. We've been talking about it all day, and we were recreating some of the scenes you were in and using some of the characters you were using, and it was great. It's what got me up this morning.
Wow.
And so, I think that the real great nuggets about long form is sometimes you can't rely on a joke, or you can't rely on something punchy or a gimmick or a gag or a game. Instead, you have to rely on one another. So it brings out these kind of genuine nuggets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we mess up enough that it doesn't look very threatening either. So I think a lot of people, after you see an improv show, just like John was saying, you feel okay doing your own little riffs and making your own goofy characters. The hour after an improv show, you can kind of see people in the audience goofing around on their own and like having their own little bits that they're doing with each other.
It's kind of opened up mm-hmm. something in them that they can play a little bit.
It's a little vulnerable. It's nice.
And then in that form of the art, I think you start expanding from the yes and concept that we talked about, and the Upright Citizens Brigade do a really good job of describing this, and you move towards an if then and an elevation mindset.
Mm.
And so that's what I was mentioning before, that yes and gets you very far in terms of connecting with the audience and having the basis of your scene. But then if you need to go 30 to 45 minutes and you need to start.
I can hardly imagine that.
How do you keep the audience connected? Then you do it by heightening, and you start, instead of asking the question of, and then I'm going to add this on it, you start asking a question of, if that is true in this world, then what else is true in this world that we can play around with and test? And then you start doing that enough. And the ultimate goal for me personally to achieve is when you start bringing back content and themes in an organized manner to kind of round out this beautiful set, and the audience is like, like the audience sees it and they're anticipating it, and all of a sudden you connect and boom, you finish a really great 30 to 40 minute set, and it's an awesome experience.
So maybe an example would be if we had continued on the monkey in a box thing. There's a company that sends people monkeys in boxes to become their friend, and that's the premise. You ifed then it, maybe 10 years in the future, every human only has one friend, and it's a monkey. And you kind of can explore what that world looks like. And then, you know, you can kind of relate to, like, well, who is my best friend? Yeah, right. What if all my friends went away and I just had a monkey? Yeah. Is that okay? I like that or not?
Or even you divert to a completely different storyline that's a very deep emotional connection between two characters, and the audience gets wrapped up in that. And then all of a sudden, a post office worker comes to the door and drops off a monkey in a box that they ordered. And it's just like, oh, I forgot that element of that world was there.
Yeah.
It's really fun to see that come
back. Or you see two people having a really deep connection, deep friendship, and then at the end, you reveal, like, both are monkeys.
Yeah, that's great. Let me throw out our phone numbers just because I seem to be getting a lot of interest, and people have it's striking a chord. You're reaching the radio audience, I think. So in Anchorage, it's 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. That's statewide. Or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Any other major principles you want to talk about? We have about, 12 minutes, and we have plenty of time to play around.
I think the last one, I don't know, you guys could agree or disagree if it's a major principle or not, but just to focus on relationships. Mm-hmm. The characters on stage and what those characters feel towards each other is way more interesting than plot.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's plot created or plot driven, a scene is actually about what those characters feel about each other. And I think that plays a lot into professional development and personal life, because in the end, our lives are just the people that we relate to and the relationships we develop professionally and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think keeping that in mind, like, what's this conversation really about, is something that has helped me extraordinarily.
What's this really about? Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah.
Right. Like, we have arguments in normal life, right? We'll have an argument about, oh, honey, you didn't take out the trash today. Why don't you take out the trash? Well, it's not about the trash. That's not what it's about. It's about all this other stuff that's connected there. And so if our improv scenes to be authentic and relatable, that's what needs to exist.
You have to get to that underlying layer.
Right.
Uh-huh. The something that makes us human or makes us, I don't know, have spark.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
One other one I heard was, I thought of it, Annalise, when you were talking, which was, it's what you're doing on the stage. You have to be doing something on the stage. It's not about, it's about the relationship between the people on the stage. Something else I read said, make statements, don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Does that ring true for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the scene, there is no fuel there is no drive and movement forward if you don't provide an idea to the scene. And inevitably, we don't necessarily regard it as a rule that you can never ask questions. In fact, sometimes that's what the character does and that's what you're motivated to do. But if you are in a constant state of asking questions, you're not providing ideas to move the scene forward and for your partner to play with. Therefore, it's not a rule to not do it, but it's probably a trend you want to steer away from a little bit.
And I think in real life, I mean, obviously ask questions in real life, a lot of safety concerns, I'm sure, but especially when, brainstorming ideas, if you're constantly putting the onus back on your partners, whether they be business partners, relationship partners, friends, whoever, then you're not driving the scene. The scene is your life. You're not driving the scene forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Great
you're connection. Not carrying the weight. Yeah.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about, how this comes off the stage and into life. And I put some links on alaskapublic.org because there's a lot written about the business world and how you can be a better leader. And it's all about listening, and it's all about not giving thumbs down on ideas, but seeing where they can go, and everybody needs to be creative and all of that. There was another guy that was in improv, but he actually wrote a column about, 10 rules from improv that have nothing to do with comedy. And so I'm going to share some of those with you because I think you might riff off of them a little bit. One of them, the first one was dare to be dull. Does that do anything for you? And if it doesn't do anything for you, I'll tell you what he said about it.
Tell us what he said.
He says, when most people start improvising, they think they need to create crazy characters and wacky situations to be funny. But the reality is that comedy comes from truth.
Yeah.
It doesn't need flashing lights or fancy fog machines. The same is true when it comes to certain work and life situations. Success isn't about getting the newest gadget. Success comes from hard work and planning, which might be viewed as dull, but it's very effective.
Yeah.
That made me think about, you can't... This preloading idea that you had, you were preloading when we were doing that word, one word.
I really wanted to be about monkeys.
Yeah.
That was really
preloading. But I think it's sort of, I mean, can you cheat by preloading? Do you have players who sometimes do cheat? I don't mean that in, you know, maybe it's a security thing. They're clinging. Well, I know I'm going to have to say something.
Preloading, that idea of talking about preloading, it's not about the content and the danger of the content. It's about the fact that once you get rid of that content and you kind of say that line on the stage, you realize that you took all of your mind power, if you will, and you thought about that content, and then you didn't listen to your scene partner. You didn't see what was going on. You were so focused on getting that line out that now once that line is out, you realize you didn't intake any information and now you don't know where the scene is going to go.
Right. That sounds like that plays out in my life all the time.
Right.
I'm in a conversation and then I start thinking of something else
exactly.
and I missed and I have to say, could you say that again? It's very embarrassing.
Or a lot of times, you know, people come to meetings or they're, you know, as a group are trying to develop an idea and they're like, I've got an idea. This is a great idea. I'm going to talk about my idea. And because they come in with that mindset, they're not open to other people's ideas and how to relate them together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so improv provides that flexibility because in our scenes, we have to have that. And in the world, we have to have that. That's how the most creative ideas are created by that interplay.
Not by one person, but by people.
Yeah. And I will add, like in my third year of working in working with BP, I sat in a presentation with like 50 or 60 other newer engineers. And one of our asset managers got up and gave a presentation about his career. And it was a beautiful moment. Like, I can't believe I experienced this in the work setting.
But there was
a beautiful moment where he said something that I've really learned from my career is that I can never say no to anybody's idea because every idea has some sort of value in it. Mm-hmm. And by saying no, you're completely rejecting any of that value. Mm-hmm. It might not be the right path or the right direction to go, but you are engaging someone and there is some sort of value that you should engage that person with. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, there is no better correlation between work and improv than that.
Right. So. That sounds great. I was thinking about it's all about relationships, as Annalise said, but you know, say you have a partner and you're moving through life and just having that attitude that your partner doesn't have a bad idea. It's just that we need to explore it a little bit more or, you know, talk about it a little bit more. And so it makes it a shared thing as opposed to, you know, it's your thing. It's not my thing. Go ahead and do it if you want. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. And so I'm going to throw out a couple other things this guy said. Make a connection with the other player. That's the team sport. Make it about the present. That sound right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand why you're playing that game. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He says, why are you doing what you're doing? This question is equally valuable in everyday life. What is your motivation for doing whatever it is you are doing? If you ask yourself this about everything, you realize there's a number of things that you do out of habit or because it's a societal norm that you aren't really motivated or excited to do. So stop it.
But I will say in improv scenes, I mean, those are kind of getting into things that you can tell yourself to jolt yourself back into the moment.
Uh-huh.
The idea of that, you know, oh, I'm scared. I got a little bit of fear. I'm confused. I'm nervous right now. If you just ask simple questions like, where am I? Why are the two of us talking? What is the motivation here? And you just take a breath and you kind of focus on the answer to those questions, you'll realize that you've just created a lot of momentum and scene work for you and your partners to use.
It's the steps that you can take. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you'll come into a scene with a physical attribute. You know, you shrug your shoulder, and that's who you are. Why am I the guy who shrugs his shoulders all the time? Why does this character do that? And that gives you a lot of information, because physicality can be such an important part of how we create these characters and interact with one another.
And I think when you fail, which like I said, everyone fails a lot. We fail a lot on stage. But when you do fail, for me, that's the question that I like to ask myself. So I still draw blanks sometimes on stage, and I'm sure my scene partners are well aware of it because my eyes get huge and I'm just go for like a couple minutes and then they save
breathe.
Me. Yeah, but there'll definitely be times when you have an off night or you have an off day, you have an off meeting, you have an off conversation with your partner, and what I learned is just you have to really think about why. Is it because you're scared? Is it because you're hungry? Is it because you feel like there's an important person in the audience that's watching you and you have to make sure that you're, you know, playing to the certain idea that they might have.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like identifying that and then being able to divorce myself from it is so incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially in work, if I'm hungry, I know to like eat a snack before going into a meeting,
uh-huh.
which I credit improv with teaching me how to do.
teaching me how to eat.
Always eat. Key lesson.
Master improv skills, ladies and
gentlemen. Now, you're going to like this one. And again, this is a guy writing about how improv works in life. He says, make your fellow players look like geniuses.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? Maybe really... burnish an idea?
I was going to say, you set the foundation for a scene. You set the foundation for the content. You play the straight man every once in a while. You're not always the wacky character. You speak to the truth of that relationship, the truth of that scene, and you're just setting your partners up to be able to play with that content and connect with that audience on that level. So it's setting your partners up to succeed.
So it's kind of like you, it's like in basketball where somebody sets up the ball and then somebody puts it in.
Alley-oop. I mean, alley-oop.
Yeah. It's partnership.
The assist is super important. We're like Steve Nash's. We're the Steve Nash's of the art world. Always assisting.
Always there to help.
I want to make a funny point about Anchorage Improv in particular. So we travel a lot, and we took this really amazing gender and comedy workshop from Stacey Lal in the Alaska State Improv Festival 2 years ago. And she kind of, said, like, a lot of times the men are the ones who a lot of times will take the wacky character, have the, like, the punchlines and have the more aggressive things going on. And the women a lot of times are, like, super critical because they're the supporting characters. They're the ones that, set up the scene. And then it'll be the straight character so that there can be this great moment, the, like, heavy lifters, if you will. And then she watched all of us and she's like, oh, man, in Alaska, this is flipped. She's like, the women are, like, just always the crazy ones, always the ones, like, here's my aggressive idea that we're going to do. And then the men in Alaska, she was like, you guys are just, like, really, really supportive. And I thought it was a really interesting, unique thing that she
identified. That's not what they often say about Alaska men, right? I mean, right. That's kind of cool. That came out. So
John Parsi, John Hennis, in touch.
Gentle, gentle giants. And Eric Dahl, our less giant, gentle person.
I will say in that same workshop, it's kind of a fun story. That we did an exercise where it was two pairs of people, two guys and then two women. And they were both given the same scene suggestion of partner A, you just cheated with their spouse for partner B. And then you two play that scene. And man, the differences in that scene between how males and females kind of view those sorts of things. It was really fun to watch. And if you take more of those situations, that was an awfully serious one. My apologies
for the
radio.
Yes, it was serious. Yes.
but if you take those situations and you play it out, you see the different perspectives that approach comedy and how you can play to those strengths.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, do you think our gender is... really defining how we, I mean, you're saying it's flipped in Alaska. That's what you learned at the workshop. It was down in Juneau, so it was still in Alaska, but the person was from outside.
She was from Portland, yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. I don't have to think about that. I'm going to throw one more out. We probably have about, not very much more time, but be more brave than impressive. I liked that. Mm-hmm. Does that ring true for you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let me
take risks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make it about, okay. Well, I'm sorry, we're out of time, and I never gave you your moment to leave us with something.
I think Parsi had it perfect there. Take risks.
Okay.
That's a good summation of everything.
That's a good walk-off. Okay, all right. Well, it's been super fun having you in the studio. And thanks to our callers and listeners. We had John Hannes of Urban Yeti, Annalise Palmer, and John Parsi. Now, I have a little bit of news for you on Hometown Alaska. This is our last show of this season. We go on hiatus through July and August, and we will be back in September. While we're on our summer break, Intelligence Squared, a very interesting public debate program, will take our place in the lineup. See you back here in September. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.